it is an aggregate, but the way that I had imagined it, or the way I was kind of wireframing it, was you give us control of all your accounts, and whenever you, and it's basically a hot switcher. So you know how you could subscribe to and turn things on and turn things off? Like, if there was a way that when you wanted to watch something, you could turn it on.
Any VC funder out there who likes Ted's idea?
Yes.
This is one of our get rich quick stream, schemes from like 3 years ago.
3 years ago when I brought it to you. I had it for 2 years before that trying to get it going.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
So I understand we have a monologue this week.
Do we?
Episode 95. That's what I hear.
Episode 95. What's the monologue? The thing I was typing up on Slack to you?
I got a ton of show notes about all the stuff Ted's watching and the stuff Ted wants to talk about. What do I have? I have my complaints and some gratitude for Mandalorian.
Okay, cool.
But yeah.
Did you watch two episodes of Mandalorian or just the one?
Oh, they have two episodes?
Ah, see, Thursday nights at midnight.
You know what I was thinking? I thought since Tuesday was the day it dropped, every Tuesday, but now it's Thursday.
No, it's they call it Friday. It has a very strange release schedule.
Okay.
It's gonna be released every Wednesday every Friday except for like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving or something like that, or the Wednesday in December, and then Christmas Eve or something, I think, is the final episode.
Okay, well, we watched one episode, then we watched the first episode.
Okay, cool.
But hey, before we get into Ted's monologue about all what he's watching, and we also have one trailer this week because Ted has watched so much. You know,
so much.
Ted
stuff.
Is making up for like weeks of watching nothing. So I think, you know, we'll give him this one to go off,
yes.
And then we can get back to a regular episode next week.
Awesome.
Okay, what do you have this week, Ted, for beer?
So today I have another Microphone Brewing Untitled Artist.
Microphone Brewing.
Microphone. It's called M-I-K.
Microphone?
Yeah, M-I-K-E-R-P-H-O-N-E.
The hell is microphone?
See, look at that.
Microphone. That's weird.
Microphone.
Yeah. It's like a microphone, but a microphone.
It's like if a guy named Michael had a microphone brewing company, a podcast and a brewing company.
Oh, SLB. I need a Jimmer phone or a Tedder phone.
The Jimmer phone.
All right, what style is it? IPA?
It's a hazelnut stout.
Ooh, a hazelnut stout. That sounds like coffee or something.
It does. It contains lactose and natural flavors.
Oh, you know what that is? That's like a hazy stout. Oh my God. The hazies have infiltrated the stouts.
Have even taken over here.
Oh no.
Right.
And you won't even know because it's so dark.
Let's see.
I'm going to crack up if you could tell it's a hazy through like a stout blackness.
It's not hazy.
But lactose is what they use to make hazy IPAs.
Is that true?
That is true, yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
All right. Well, while you're letting the foam and the you're tasting. Go for it.
Ooh, it's milky. Milky smooth. It's a milky smooth 12 ABV.
Oh my. Okay, well, first of all, you destroyed me on the ABV.
So, can I say one thing before we get into your beer?
How Ted is all after the highest ABVs possible?
So, I see people we went to a restaurant last week for my birthday last weekend, and we go into the restaurant, and these people don't listen to Trail Junkies podcast.
Wait, what?
And these people don't listen to Trailer Junkies podcast.
Oh, are you serious? I thought everybody did.
I'm serious. I know.
Oh.
But we go into it's called the Six Chop House, or I think that's what it's called. Ann will probably text me soon. But we go in there for dinner, and I order a beer, and I said, what kind of beers do you have? And the guy just says to me, he goes, oh, I have a 13% beer. I was like, I didn't ask like what the ABV is. Like, don't hit me. Like, do I look like an alcoholic or something? Why are you telling me the alcohol content of the beers you have?
I think they're closet Trailer Junkies.
That's what
they're
it is.
Closeted Trailer Junkies.
He's like, oh, look, Ted's coming in. So yeah, I had a 13%er.
I heard about you
the other night.
You need high ABV.
And then we went out with the team for lunch and a day at Disneyland for team building. Great event. And the bartender, the waiter there, you know, he was like a bartender. He's like, oh, we have something that's not off the menu. It's this great stout, and it's a 13%. And I was like, what am I? I didn't say anything about how much alcohol I need. And then he brought me like a tasting flight, and my whole team's like, oh, Ted, look at you getting some special service here. So that was a lot of fun. But yes, everybody in the world seems to know that I like high ABV.
Yeah, well, you wear it. All right, so I have Knee Deep Brewing Company.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you've heard about them.
I have heard of them.
Okay, so.
Which one?
I'm kind of worried about this one. So it's a Oops-a-Daisy. So it says it's a New England style IPA, but the way the Oops-a-Daisy is spelled, well, Daisy is D-H-A-Z-Y, as in like hazy. So I'm kind of concerned that this might be a hazy New England.
It seems like it is.
You've had this.
No, by that misspelling.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
Yes, that's so what you said. Yeah.
It doesn't say it's a hazy, but it says it's New England, but we'll find out. Can is, oh my God, it's foaming.
Uh-oh.
Look out. Oh, there. Oh, I just saved it.
Oh, you got the big triple caramelite.
Oh, I'm dripping on myself over here.
Uh-oh.
All right, we're going to find out if this is a oops-a-daisy or a oops I spilled on myself. Oh, man.
Both.
Yeah, probably both.
It's both.
Well, let that settle. Oh, you know what? I think it is slightly hazy. I think it's like a hazy New England. Other than the name, well, I guess it says Oops De Hazy. I don't know. But I'll let the head go down because I poured like too vigorous and it's like all foamy. I'll get to that in a second. But
yeah,
we had a week off.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of catch up on the week, we had on Saturday last week. So the reason we didn't record Friday night was because I had to get up like way early. Me, the wife, Clarissa, that everybody should know at this point, unless you're new. Clarissa's my wife. And my father-in-law, Frank, we did the...
My neighbor, Frank.
Across the street, yeah, which we've talked about 1,000 times. So if you're new, go back, listen to a bunch of episodes, you'll get caught up, and you'll find out what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But we did the Figaro Mountain Gran Fondo, and they had a number of different routes. One of the routes was 35 miles through the Santa Ynez Valley, and mm-hmm. Frank, my father-in-law, and Clarissa, my wife, they did that route as a father-daughter kind of a team. And I did the 100-mile loop. And that went over Figaro Mountain and then like a couple other like Cat Canyon and a few other like climbs. It was like 9,000 feet of climbing or something. Yeah, it was a great day. The weather was like tremendously beautiful. I passed Barry Bonds at mile 8. So I thought that was amazing. About mile, oh, I don't know, 16, maybe 15, I passed Alex Stadia, who was the first North American to wear the yellow jersey in the Tour de France,
mm-hmm.
1983, 84, maybe 84, I guess. So you have a Tour de France yellow jersey wearer, and I passed him on a climb, which that to me was like, made it completely like amazing. And yeah, I was like, I don't know, the 23rd fastest over the mountain.
Nice.
You know, pros and stuff did it. And then I think I was like 61st overall, you know, so like out of like about 700 people. So actually I had good day, you know, and
yeah,
I felt good. Well, let me refrain. I felt like shit during the day. But when it was all over and I realized why I felt so awful, like I actually had a good finish and I think I just rode really hard. And in the end, I just felt, mm-hmm. you know, I felt okay. But no, it was cool though. And then Barry Bonds was there. And who was the basketball guy? They did a 30 for 30. Indiana Pacers. Help me out.
Reggie Miller.
Yeah. And Reggie Miller was there, which I don't think I ever saw him. He might might have been like way ahead of me and never caught up, or he was behind me and never caught me. I'm not even sure. But yeah, Reggie Miller was there, and it was cool. It was cool. There was a couple of women cyclists that are pros, I think, and forgive me the names. I mean, I'm terrible with names, but one of them has like more wins than any cyclist like ever, you know, like 500 wins in all these races, and I couldn't tell you her name. I'm sorry, but... But it was very amazing. It was a great day. And then afterwards, you know, there was an awesome meal and a great event, and it was a good party, and, you know, all was good.
Yeah.
And then Sunday was Ted's birthday.
Well, my birthday was...
Oh, your birthday wasn't Sunday.
My birthday was... what day was it? The 9th.
The 9th.
So the 9th was... Wasn't the 9th?
Oh, Saturday was the 9th.
The 9th was Saturday.
Oh, so the wine tasting then was the 10th.
The 10th, right.
Okay, so the day after your birthday, but for your yes, birthday.
Of course. You know the Willets, we like to celebrate our birthdays a week long.
All year?
Because we're continuing the celebration tomorrow.
Oh, God.
You know? So the celebration continues.
Well, the Willets celebrate all year, and then when the next year, like, it's not, like, you're always in birthday mode.
That's why I drink high ABV alcohol.
You celebrate until the next one's birthday, so.
That's right.
The person whose birthday is closest to the next gets shortchanged, but, you know, screw them.
But, oh, I want to say thank you. I have not cracked into the humidor.
Oh, yeah.
But I put that shelf in there, and I rearranged everything, and I made sure everything was great. And I will be the custodian for that. And if Timmy or Mikey want it, you know, maybe in the day, maybe it's kind of like a Vancura heirloom, and we'll keep it in the Vancura line.
So what Ted's referring to, my dad was a cigar smoker, and he had, I don't know, like, I mean, lots of really expensive cigars. And one night I was sitting in the backyard. Clarissa goes to bed early, and I'm sitting in the backyard reading a book, you know, ebook. So it has that backlit thing going on.
Right.
What do you call them? Like a LED backlit ebook kind of thing, like a Kindle.
Oh yeah. The Kindle. Yeah.
There's like a name for it, but anyway. And I thought, you know, I have all these cigars. Clarissa went to bed early for whatever the reason. It was a beautiful night. I'm going to go get one, like a Partagas or something.
Oh yeah.
And I go, and it's like a little Partagas, and I snip the back, I light it, I'm like, oh man, a cigar. Next thing you know, I get about halfway down the cigar, and I'm not inhaling, it's just strictly like the mouth nicotine
right
absorption. Oh my God, the world starts spinning, and I thought, I'm never smoking a cigar again. And to top it off, Clarissa's like, you know, you smoked that cigar a week ago, and she's kissing me, whatever, she's like, I can still taste it. So I've been like maintaining these cigars, and then we go to Cuba a year and a half ago, whatever. Well, almost yeah. 2 years ago now. Wow, time gets by. We go to Cuba.
And we were podcasting at the time, so we've been podcasting for a long time, my friend.
Oh, for sure. And I have like, man, it's like every story just gets longer. So to make a long story longer, when you go to Cuba, you can't really bring America. Here's a travel hack for anybody going to Cuba out there.
Okay.
If you're going to Cuba, you can't just go with American dollars. Well, you can, but they're going to penalize you 10% on top of the exchange rate.
Really?
So go to your bank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, like whoever your bank is, go to your bank and exchange American for euros or Canadian or anything else.
Okay.
And then take that money to Cuba, and then you get like you save on the exchange rate.
Nice.
The biggest issue is you exchange in the US, you exchange in Cuba, so you're paying like almost a double exchange rate, but it's still cheaper than if you go down there with American money.
Is that cheaper than even just not exchanging it when you get there and using dollars to spend? Don't people want dollars?
No, I tried that. They want nothing to do with American dollars because they get penalized.
I see.
Yeah,
I see.
Everybody gets penalized. Anyway, so what you wind up doing is you have this money, and to change it back into U.S. currency.
Or euros, yeah.
You have to change it back to euros to change it back to American. So you're like burning cash. And it's like, you know what?
Literally,
right? And it's like, well, let's go and just spend it. We just spent, like, I think we went down there with like $1,000 that we'd planned to spend. And it was like, we just figured, you know, we're not coming back with any money. We're just going to spend it all.
Right.
And we had like a couple $100 left. And we're just like, screw it. We just went and bought, we went to some like cigar rolling, manufacturing, distributing cigar tour, you know, down to the tobacco fields, whatever. You know, whatever it was, right?
Oh, that's awesome.
And then, you know, we bought like an array of an assortment of cigars, which is in that humidor that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a couple $100 in cigars, you throw them in there. Excuse me. And you throw them in there. But so my dad was this big cigar smoker, and I just couldn't stand cigars after a while. I mean, you know, and so that's how I gave him the Ted for his birthday.
Thank you very much. We will enjoy them. Ann and I like to smoke on occasion, you know, a few a year. And now with your big collection, it'll probably be up to one a quarter. So we'll see what we can do.
What do you think's in there? About 50, 60, 80, something like that?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like at least 60. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of cigars in there. Maybe I'll share one with you one night just to.
There you go.
You know, just to annoy Clarissa.
By the fire. Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, the beer I think is a hazy. It is a hazy. So the oops a de hazy is the way it goes. But it's still it's good though. It's like it's kind of has like a piney flavor. It's not very sweet and citrusy, but it's slightly hazy. So
I will tell you, the hazelnut stout is a stout that I've never had before, and it is amazing. It is well balanced. Great mouthfeel. You know, 12% is not hidden, but not over the top. So it's good.
All right. Right. So, Ted, I think we've annoyed people enough with our cigar talk.
Okay.
But I wanted to get into how your week was and everything. And we kind of covered why we didn't record last week. But what I want to talk about for how your week was, since I said it was going to be a monologue and I'm not shutting up.
Uh-huh.
Let's get into all of what you've been watching.
Okay, so we'll do what you've been watching first. So there's a reason to why I'm watching all this stuff. When we came to you, when we had our wine tasting at Fess Parker and a little beer tasting at Figaro Mountain Brew Pub.
Yes, very good.
Town in Los Olivos. Did I say it wrong again?
Los Olivos.
Damn it. Did I say it right?
You're close. I get the gist.
God, I can't. Yeah, okay.
It's Los Olivos.
So we're in Figaro Mountain in there. And they had Big Cone Black Ale.
That was very good.
So I got to share that with you guys. Yeah. And that's the first time you and Frank had that. So I was very happy to share that with you guys.
Very, very awesome beer.
But I had just bought the new phones. Ann and I had needed new phones, and we had the...
Oh, is that it there?
iPhone 6s. That's it there.
Oh, look at that. Three cameras? What?
It's got the three cameras. It's got 512 gigs on it. It's the maxed out. It's called the iPhone 11 Pro Max 512.
Sure.
So it has 512 gigs on it because I have so many streaming services. When you sign up with Sprint, they give you Hulu perpetually. So like every year you renew with them, they'll pay your Hulu bill. And then you get Amazon Prime perpetually. So every year you renew, you get that. They give you 1 year of Tidal.
What's Tidal?
And then because Tidal's like a music streaming service, it's like Spotify, except it's owned by Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Oh, okay. Never heard of it.
So Tidal's a smaller streaming service for music. I have to talk to my composer friend, Bartok, to see if they're a little fairer to the musical artists. Have you noticed that all these artists are coming, all the music acts are coming out of the woodworks and performing and doing live concerts and stuff? They're doing tours. They're going back on tour. It's because Spotify has like undercut their royalty checks.
Okay, so the only way they can make money is to go on tour, you mean? Or
yeah, so they have to go on tour again.
Gotcha.
That's why Paul McCartney went back on tour. Everybody's going on tour anyway. So we get Tidal for just for a year, and then because they're new iPhones, we get the Apple TV Plus for a year, and that's only the introductory things. And on top of that, like I said, you and I both, we got in under the wire, and we got the 3 years of Disney Plus, which just started.
That's like $2.99 for, isn't it $2.99 is what it came out to be or something?
I think it was like around $3. Yeah, I think it was just over $3. But
and even Disney Plus is like $6. It's not that bad.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's $6.99 or something like that. Hashtag not a sponsor. That was, so I listened to, of course, a fantasy football podcast, but they were talking about Disney Plus this week. So I didn't feel so bad. They did only talk about it for under a minute because they had a lot of fantasy football to get to.
Yeah.
Unlike our 20 minutes, but that's fine. So that's all the free stuff I got from signing up with this new service. So I don't know.
And you're with Sprint, you said.
I just changed to Sprint. You know, Verizon, I've been with Verizon for 15 years, and they were just like, nope, we only give BOGOs to new customers. And I was like, that sucks.
That does suck, doesn't it? Like, thank you for supporting my loyalty. Yeah.
But anyway, so Sprint was great. This little reseller on Ventura Boulevard was great. So they hooked us up with stuff, and we got the new phones. Ann and I got the new phones, and they gave us two free lines for the kids. So the kids got our old phones as their phones. So we'll see how that goes. We just activated.
So you just transferred all the numbers around then?
Yeah, but their old phones were just Wi-Fi enabled, so this is actual cellular service for free.
Right, that's what I mean. But the numbers you transferred back to your phone and got them new numbers and stuff.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So we have four lines now, and this is like the beginning. This is how they get you. You know, they start you free, and then they keep it going. But anyway, so I did watch.
Hey, the first taste is free.
I did watch a lot of television this week, a lot of streaming services.
All on the phone.
Well, I watched some on my computer. So I was also finishing up.
What's the phone? Is it like a 20 inch?
It is the largest phone. It's a 6.3 okay. inch, you know.
That's a good size. Yeah. How's the camera? All I care about on those things is the camera.
There's three of them.
It could be like a 1 megabyte phone, but is the camera, as long as the camera is good.
It's got three different focal lengths. So those are the three cameras on there. It's got a wide angle, a zoom, and a regular, I guess.
Do they combine the lenses for anything, or is it like, depending on what you want to do, its software changes the lenses?
Exactly. Okay. So you can change the complexity of the lenses. So I don't know how it does it, but it's taking, you know, multiple pictures as you're taking a picture.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, using its software it's using AI and software to kind of make this great image. So already the images are better than I've ever had. And tomorrow night we go to the desert and we're going to let lanterns off in the sky. And I'm like, ooh, we need a low light camera, you know? So we're going to bring our new cameras and we'll see how it takes these wide angle shots of all of the big field.
Well, when you say new cameras, you mean phones.
Yeah, it's the same one and the same. It means the same thing now.
So would you say that they're better than the D? You have like a D70 or something, right? Like an old Nikon?
I have an old Nikon, a D60.
A D60, okay. So a D60, I mean, that, wow, that's pretty ancient though.
It is very,
in the,
very
in the world ancient. Of cameras. So right. Your phones are probably taking better photos than the D60.
I think they're twice as good as that, at least.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and they build phones to replace the cameras. You know, the lenses on the phones keep up with that. And even the, you know, the lady selling us the phone, she said the Galaxy is probably better as far as a camera quality and low light, but all these phones are better than, you know, a lot of DSLRs.
Well, and the way I would chime into that is I probably had an Android phone for about 10 years, mm-hmm. different ones, you know, and moved over to the iPhone 8, and we bought iPhone 8s used. I mean, I think we got like two iPhone 8s for $300 a piece or something. And they're just a standard 64 gig iPhone 8s and everything.
Yeah.
And after about a week of trying to figure out the phone and working with it and stuff, my first thought was, what the hell took me so long?
They were trying to sell us 8s for the kids. It was going to cost us $10 a month with like a $100 buyout at the end of 18 months. So that's about $300 for these refurbished 8s.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, about $300 is what we paid, and they were refurbished and everything, you know, used refurbished. But like you said, though, the Samsung's better with low light and everything. And that might be true. And cameras are, I mean, to have a good camera, in my opinion, is important. important, but then you got to deal with Android again. And like, I'll have to say though, man, going to the iPhone, and I'm a Mac user too, so maybe that's part of it. And everything is kind of like in that ecosystem. And now like I'm completely mind controlled. But yeah, what took me so long?
When your Fitbit dies, you're going to go with Apple Watch, I'm pretty sure.
You know, it depends. The one thing about the Fitbit that I do like is you get about a week's worth of battery. And from what I understand from the Apple, like you get a day's worth of battery.
Yeah.
And man, talk about a drag. After a week, I'm like, oh my God, I got to charge it. This sucks. You know, I mean, I couldn't imagine doing it every night.
I only charge it during the time that I shower, even though I can shower with my watch.
Yeah, but you don't have an iPhone.
I charge it during the shower. Right, exactly. I have the Fitbit.
And I do the same. When I get done working out in the morning at 5, work out till like 6, whatever. And then, yeah, while I'm showering, eating breakfast, getting dressed, I do the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. So back to what I'm watching.
Back to what Ted's watching.
So right on Tuesday was the day we got our new phones. Tuesday night, I guess we had already...
Wait, can I excuse you really for a second?
Please.
You said you had a week trying to figure out how to log into everything.
Yes.
Shifting accounts doesn't just auto log you in?
It does for most of them.
Like if you just say, hey, here I am, I'm on this phone, like it doesn't auto do it?
It did for a lot of accounts, but some accounts, even though it has all the passwords...
Because you had to download the new apps and everything.
Yeah, the OS is a slightly different, you know, it's like some of the apps actually were completely different because the phone has the face scan.
Oh, yeah.
Over the finger, it's like a completely different app. So there are some apps that were like, you can't download this app for this phone.
Oh.
So you need to download a different, you know, when you go to the app store, it recognizes the phone that you're using and it says, oh, okay, for this phone, we need to give you this app.
You got to love upgrades, don't you? Or downgrades, so, whichever way that you know.
Exactly. It's the frustration level, and it's just, and then there's all the mechanics of like how to move files around and how to close apps and stuff. And
yeah, I got you.
So it's a lot of fun, but you know.
All right. So what you're watching.
What I'm watching. So obviously we watch Mandalorian.
Yes.
I watched Mandalorian at midnight when it came out.
Oh.
And because I was in the app, I said, oh, well, let me just download a bunch of stuff because I love the fact that you can just download the files into the phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it was Monday nights, midnight. So I still had my old phone. So I probably downloaded like a gig or a gig and a half, 2 gigs worth of media into my old phone.
You don't have a current Apple TV, do you?
I do not. My Apple TV, the Apple TV I have is an Apple TV 2, Gen 2. And I think, what are they on, Gen 5 or 4?
5, I think.
Yeah. So I don't have a 4 or a 5.
And I'm probably like screwing up my different companies' jargon and lingo, but you can't like download to your phone and cast it over to another device, like an Apple TV device.
No.
Oh, another one, huh?
I've been drinking these 12 ounces the past couple of shows, and it was not enough. So
there you go. So you can't cast it over. Who casts stuff? Is that Amazon?
That's Chrome. Chrome casts.
Oh, Chrome casts. Okay, whatever. But so you can't just do that with what's been downloaded on your phone to like your TV or something. Can you do that, or what does it take to do it with Apple?
You can do it if it's a smart TV or if you have like Gen 4, I think, of the Apple TV.
Okay.
But I end up watching so much stuff on my phone. It's
you're like the kids.
It's just comforting. It's in your hand. It's right there. You could turn it down to the lowest volume setting and just listen to it nice and tight and quiet in your hand. It's amazing.
I want bigger and louder and boomier.
Hey,
and
you just put it close to your face, man. It's right there.
It's right there. So, okay, Mandalorian, what else you got going?
So Mandalorian, I watched the first episode Monday night, and then I watched the second episode this morning when I got to work.
Okay.
I was finishing up the quarterly report and watching Mandalorian.
We'll do the second episode tomorrow night after Mikey's birthday.
Awesome. That's right. Happy birthday, Mikey. And then High School Musical, the musical, the series.
Okay.
Which I will say is probably my favorite thing on Disney Plus right now. It's amazing. Like, and I say that, and I know that I work at Disney Channel, so I'm a little bit biased. But just the impact that it has on the children that's Audrey's age and a little bit older.
For sure.
It has like this innocence to it that is just missing in the atmosphere of television. Like everybody kind of wants to be cutting edge and everybody wants to be like evocative and provocative and, you know, filled with murder and lying and all this deceit. And this is just... it's wholesome, yet it's of our time, of this time. So it has the qualities of, you know, High School Musical, as well as the qualities of, you know, contemporary Gen Z feel. So Audrey was amazingly taken up by it. And I asked some other friends that have teenage children, and even the teenage children are lacking of something like this in their life. Something that is both entertaining and wholesome at the same time. So I love it. My favorite thing about everything.
Wow.
But right after I watched the first episode of Mandalorian, I said, ooh, I need more Star Wars. So I watched Rogue One.
Okay.
Which is in the streaming service. And then I said, oh, Rogue One, what else is on here? You know? And they're kind of pushing Avatar. So I said, hey, I got this long, you know, year-end report that I'm trying to pound out. Let me watch Avatar in the background while I'm trying to pound out this, you know, annual report. So I spent, you know, like, what is it, 3.5 hours watching Avatar and pounding out this report. And it's amazing how it holds up. It's just a good quality movie. Plenty of times.
Well, but it's like 2000. It's 10 years old. It's not that old.
But when you're talking about computer graphics.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
You know, there are points in time where you kind of thought of it as an animated. It kind of looked a little more animated than computer generated graphics, you know?
Yeah.
But it still holds up in the storytelling and the story and everything that's going on. It was emotional. It was very well done. And it continues to be a great movie. So I think it kind of got dissed a little bit in the way people remembered it. So I was surprised at how much I liked it.
Yeah.
And then because we have Apple TV Plus, I'm like, I'm not going to miss out on this. I only have this for a year where it's going to go away.
And I'm going to watch everything.
You have it for 7 days. Have you been binging?
No, we haven't done any of it yet. I didn't want to start it yet.
You got the birthday party. You got to clear the birthday party out of the way. And then you
I want to wait until I have a free runway of 7 days of nothing.
Let me tell you, the morning show.
And just run with it.
The morning show and All Mankind.
For All Mankind.
The two shows I'm watching, they're quality shows. I made the mistake of, you know, doing a hot take on the morning show and thinking it's really.
TJP hot take.
Like, it's like Newsroom Light, because they had kind of an opening sequence where Reese Witherspoon tries to sell the coal debate the same way Pullman did the... Is it Pullman? Yeah. Is it Pullman? Shit.
Do you think we're in peak streaming service?
Personally, I am in peak streaming service, 100%.
I mean, how could you have any more streaming service? There's too many.
There's too many. And literally, like you said, like people wouldn't want to sign up for these things, but people are throwing streaming services at you.
Maybe that's an indicator we're in peak streaming.
I think we're in peak streaming. Because if you have a Verizon wireless account, a company that I have left after 15 years, they're giving away Disney Plus. They're doing the 1 year trial for Disney Plus.
Okay.
So that's kind of amazing. But I was like, oh, that's not keeping me because I already paid for 3 years. So there's no value in that for me.
So let me talk about Disney Plus for a second.
Okay. We'll take a break in what I'm watching because I've watched much more, but we'll continue.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead.
So the beauty of Disney Plus is that we get on there. And before I get into my Mandalorian critique.
Review. Yes.
The thing about Disney Plus I love is everything Disney's ever done. And I love how when you look at Netflix and you see like what you're watching, current, my list, documentaries, whatever. Well, Disney Plus does the same, right?
Uh-huh.
But one of the titles is The Vault. And I was like, oh my God, they even titled it The Vault. And it's like everything, right? So all the Disney stuff.
Right.
All the Pixar stuff, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
All the Star Wars, from the animation to the movies to everything.
Right.
All the Nat Geo stuff. I mean, like, it is... there is...
Nat Geo.
There's so...
It was amazing.
There's so much content. So much content. We got the $3 a month deal. But even if... If it's a $6 a month deal. And I mean, let me tell you, we're not like paid by any of these people.
No.
Any of these services. At $6 a month, I think is what the typical is. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But talk about a deal. There is so much content. I want to turn Netflix off. Serious.
Oh, God. Let's play this for...
No, there is like... At least temporarily, because there is so much content. The thing that I like about Disney as well is that you could bring in stuff from, I don't know, how long does it go, how far does it go back? 60 years, 70 years?
Oh, yeah.
80
yeah.
years? I don't even know how far. But you could bring back those early, you know, animations from, I mean, the waybacks, and up to the cutting edge, bleeding edge stuff, and the breadth of things. Some of it is very family oriented, very children, very juvenile. And then you look at The Mandalorian and it's like, wow, this is kind of like, you know, violent and, you know, and crass in a way. But overall, though, I mean, I think that's a great service. We've been watching a lot of stuff on Amazon Prime lately, and they tend to have more and more of the things that you want to kind of watch. I'm finding Netflix is having less and less of what you want to watch, you know, and I don't know if it is
amazing.
I don't know if it's licensing. I don't know if it's contracts or how they're working it and stuff, but Amazon, I was thinking about getting rid of, and I'm finding that when I search for things, Amazon has a ton of stuff. Disney, obviously, we just got, has a ton of stuff. Oh, and then all the, I forgot the Avengers.
Yeah.
Or not Avengers, all the Marvel stuff.
All the Marvel stuff.
So we were looking at it. We still have Captain Marvel and Endgame to go through for the,
there you go,
you know, to finish out the Marvel Super Challenge.
That's right.
Whatever the hell we called it. And then, but yeah, Netflix is like floundering, man, in my opinion. I mean, what's your thoughts?
So Netflix is, you know, we are going to watch the holiday specials. There's a...
There's
a holiday teen thing that's going on that was pretty well cast. And we watched half of it. I watched half of it with Audrey. It was pretty good. And then there's that, the Claus thing or Klaus that we're going to watch for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Netflix is just kind of, it fills it out and it's kind of the new, it has a lot of new stuff. And I think it's going to kind of lean into the idea of bringing in the new. But to me, it's interesting to see the camps, the different approaches to the way they do streaming services. So Disney Plus and Netflix have a very similar model where I call them the content cul-de-sacs.
Okay.
Where they let you in and you're in that space, but they only show you things that you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, so Audrey went in there and she's like, I made her avatar Spider-Man because she's a big Tom Holland fan. And so I said, I made her Spider-Man, the avatar. So she, the first day she gets in there, she starts searching for Spider-Man Homecoming. And I'm like, baby, that's Sony. You can't get Spider-Man Homecoming. But she's like, but my avatar is Spider-Man, you know? And so she immediately changes her avatar to Ratatouille. And and then I'm thinking like, oh, okay. So, and it gave her Cars 3. So she searched for Spider-Man Homecoming. It gives her Cars 3. I was like, ah, that's a typical Netflix move. Like Netflix, you search for something in Netflix, it gives you something else. It gives you what they offer and it kind of tries to matrix into what it thinks you want. But then you have the model of Hulu or the model of Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have Hulu.
So Hulu and Amazon Prime to me are very comparable.
Okay.
But what they do is they have deals with the other streaming services and they'll allow you to plug in. So if you have like, they'll show you like HBO and Showtime stuff from their streaming service. Oh, and Apple TV Plus also does this.
Amazon does that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So they'll show you other stuff and they'll say like, oh, you want that? Well, you can do that, but that's not part of the service that you pay for right now. You can have that as an add-on.
An add-on, right.
So they're making streaming bundles for you, where you can pay one person, Amazon, and you can add other streamers to it.
Sure.
So it's kind of like the ease of use.
So they're partnering with these others.
They're partnering with it. They're doing a bundle. They're doing a mini bundle is what I like to call it. But yes.
So explain to me why ABC is not a part of Disney, or Disney Plus, I should say.
So ABC is falling under the Hulu brand, and there are definitely some things that will, I think they're going to, it's all about branding. So the fact that Disney bought Hulu outright and now puts a lot of Nat Geo stuff on the Disney Plus side, and now I think it's public knowledge that FX is on the Hulu side, you know?
Yeah.
So they are definitely hitting the other all the other streaming services from two sides. So it's a two-front battle that Disney can wage against all these other streaming services. They have Disney with the brand and the high family value, and then they have Hulu that's for everything else. If it's not family branded, or if it's high art like FX stuff is, then they can attack from another front, you know? So it's a perfect balance of where you could put content. There is no show that couldn't be bought and distributed by Disney.
So if you look at ABC and you go back to the, you know, like the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, you know, Wide World of Sports and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Will they, or would they ever come up with any of like the old sporting events, the old Olympics, or the old, you know, any ABC sports events and everything? Or is it strictly going to be like modern day television that they're going to be streaming?
I feel like Disney Plus, or I mean, I feel like ESPN Plus already almost has co-branding with ABC.
Oh, so ESPN has a plus.
Yes.
And they've bought into all, or not bought into, but they've purchased and distribute all of that old sports and everything.
I think I've seen some of that stuff. They have definitely, you know, your 30 for 30s that you even talked about before earlier.
Oh yeah, 30 for 30s are great.
So they're in the ESPN Plus. So, you know, I'm sorry, I said two fronts. I guess they have three fronts because they have ESPN Plus. So if you have classic or smaller market kind of sports, then you have ESPN Plus. And Hulu does like some live sports events too. So, you know, I think they are developing their own kind of separate arrows in the quiver of Disney that can attack all comers.
So then we're looking at Disney Plus, Hulu, Apple TV Plus,
right?
Netflix, Prime. What else are you subscribed to?
Currently, that's it.
Oh, currently, that's it.
So the things that I'm not subscribed to are the channel-specific brands.
So is that the shorter list? What Ted's not subscribed to?
Well, no, because I did that with the family, because the kids are like, well, what aren't we subscribed to? And I said, we don't subscribe to HBO. We don't subscribe to Showtime,
Stars,
or TNT or Stars.
Okay.
So those are the
AMC.
No AMC, you know. So it's, those are the, I think they're very, those are even more niche than that. So like all the major broad streamers we're subscribed to.
So what would it take? Like if you look at AMC, they have some decent shows. Like, okay, let's assume something like The Walking Dead was still new enough to where you would, it was worth subscribing to AMC for. What would it take as a per show streaming cost for you to buy in, if you were going to buy it? Like, you know, you're telling me For All Mankind is worthwhile.
I think so.
Why would I get into an entire platform versus just getting the show? And what would the price point be to avoid the platform and just get the show? I mean, do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think so.
Because like, why would I subscribe to like 13 different services if I just want to watch 13 different shows? I mean, that's a lot of shows, but I'm just saying though, like you look at HBO, they have like a plethora of, I don't know, like lots and lots of stuff. Showtime, lots of stuff.
Right.
I mean, they all have lots of stuff, but I want to watch like very specific, you know, we've talked about the Paul Rudd series that's out.
Oh, yes.
I mean, what's that series?
Living With Yourself.
Living With Yourself. We've talked about Living With Yourself with Paul Rudd, and I want to watch that show, but I don't want to necessarily subscribe to the whole platform. Like, what's it going to take at some point to just get the things you want at a reasonable price.
I don't know.
You don't think that's going
to
happen?
No. Unless you and I do the pangolin thing like I was trying to do with you like 3 years ago.
Yeah, but that's not subscribing to the show. That's more an aggregate, though.
It is an aggregate, but the way that I had imagined it or the way I was kind of wireframing it was you give us control of all your accounts. And whenever you, and it's basically a hot switcher. So you know how you could subscribe to and turn things on and turn things off? Like if there was a way that when you wanted to watch something, you could turn it on.
Any VC funder out there who likes Ted's idea?
Yes.
This is one of our get rich quick stream, schemes from like 3 years ago.
3 years ago when I brought it to you, I had it for 2 years before that trying to get it going.
Oh, bad.
So it'd be like if you give us
5 years in the making.
If you give us the account, if you give us all of your give us your credit card information first, right?
But you still need the account though, right?
No, but I would turn on the account. We'd turn on the account for you. And then we would let you watch that show. And then you'd have, not only you would have the matrix of all the shows that you're watching, but then you'd also have the matrix of like how you said it yourself earlier in this episode. You said, maybe we turn Netflix off for a little bit while we have the new services because we have Disney Plus.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
When you go in and you log in and you want to watch something, then, you know, the way that it tells you now on the aggregated services like Apple TV Plus is like, oh, you don't own that right now, but we'd gladly add that to your service for a little extra, you know?
Yeah.
But with Pangolin, they would say like, do you really want to watch it? Or do you want to wait till the end of the month where we could switch you over? You know, once you've either, you know, you can't wait anymore or it's time to switch, you know?
So you'd aggregate the billing cycles too.
We'd aggregate the billing cycles so you could switch people when they've had enough of like, oh, the season of Mandalorian just ended. Would you like to switch? And now you have like a full season of, you know, this on the next Stranger Things is out, you know, or, you know, the next HBO series that you wanted to watch, you know, you could program it to make sure that you caught the beginning of that. Or like, oh, I want to watch like an episode. I would only want to watch an episode a night, but HBO and Disney Plus, they release weekly. So we'll turn that on a week into the last episode so then you can watch it one every night and then, you know, then we'll get out of there, you know, but because of the way the billing goes, you pay for a month at a time. So we try to maximize. So we'd matrix out the maximizing of all the things, but Apple, like not Apple TV, but Amazon is the kind of the outlier because you're paying for Prime.
You're paying for a lot of other services.
So there's a lot of other services in there. So it kind of, it doesn't fall into this idea of switching on and off, but Hulu does, you know, Netflix does, and eventually Disney Plus will because there's no shipping that you're getting with Disney Plus.
Unless you're buying like a Mickey Mouse t-shirt.
So what's your thoughts of Mandalorian? Let's do a little Mandalorian critique.
Okay, yeah. First thing is I don't like the title.
The Mandalorian?
Well, you've been saying Mandalorian this whole thing, and everyone I've talked to says Mandalorian. No one says The Mandalorian, right? Because it's because
Californians made it, and Californians call it The 101.
Well, true, yeah. The 101. The 170.
The 405.
Yeah, the 405. Everything is the. But when you think about like the title, everybody I've talked to just says, what do you think of Mandalorian? Mandalorian this, Mandalorian that. So first of all, get rid of the and just call it Mandalorian. That's my spiel on the title.
That's your title executive note. I got it.
Executive note. Because everybody's just calling it Mandalorian. And I understand it's about this one particular Mandalorian. But I think if you just call it Mandalorian, that implies it can still be that guy.
What if they called it a Mandalorian?
No, just Mandalorian.
I will get that to Jon Favreau right away.
Please do. Second, it looks like Star Wars. It does not feel like Star Wars.
Ah, so by design.
By design.
Tell me how it doesn't. Tell me how it doesn't feel like. This is, of course, obviously no inside information for me. But tell me what you say it doesn't feel like Star Wars.
Well, a few reasons. One, there's no John Williams music.
Okay.
Second.
But you like the music. Don't you like the music? I love the music.
Oh, the music was fine.
It's good.
But that's why I said it looks like Star Wars. It doesn't feel like Star Wars.
Right.
The second thing is it plays like a television show more than a movie.
That's why I said by design. So you read my notes because I was like, I was so jazzed and pumped to give
you just
this,
kept going
discussion. I just kept going. So it is a serial.
Yeah.
And John Favreau knows that this is something that is a marathon, whereas films and cinematic endeavors are...
You got to tell it in 2 minutes.
They're sprints, you know?
Two hours, I'm sorry. You got to tell it in 2 hours.
Yeah. Trailers in 2 minutes, movies in 2 hours. And all the characters and all the action, they have to be epic. They have to be, you know, balls to the wall, you know, like top of, you know, it has to like grab your attention and hang you out to dry. But this is a TV show, and we're going to let you know it's a TV show because we're going to like sparingly give you action. We're going to give you nice, you know, gentle, beautiful landscapes. We'll explore characters. We'll just bathe in the exploration of who the Mandalorian is.
For sure. And in movies, like they had the scene where he was cutting across that village of bad guys.
Yeah.
And in like a movie, he would be on one side, he would shoot his phaser twice, and he'd be on the other side.
Yeah.
But in a TV show, it's like the whole thing that gets him across with the robot bounty hunter. And I mean, it's just like drawn out and stuff. And that's fine. I don't take issue with it in the sense of watching it as a TV show, but with decades of watching Star Wars movies, you're like in that pace and you're just like, man, this is like going, you know?
There is an expectation that is not met, and then you have to just kind of understand that what you're looking at is not...
It's a TV show.
Exactly. It's a serial.
Yeah.
It's a serial and it's serialized.
And I think the third thing is when you look at like transitions and jump cuts,
mm-hmm.
The movies always had like a cool edit, you know, like the fades and the way the scenes would like one scene fades out, the next scene fades in.
Yeah.
You know, the way Star Wars, the original Star Wars and Lucas would do those things. And this is more just choppy edits, like a generalized TV show, I guess.
But I thought that it had some interesting... It had like a circle wipe in it. You know what I mean? It has some.
Did it?
It has some of that. It had a circle. Well, maybe I'm looking. Maybe it's the second episode that had the circle wipe.
Okay.
But it definitely felt like it had a nod to that. It had a taste of it. But you're right. It is not cinematic. It is serial.
And then I think the final thing was I didn't know what to expect as far as the show. And my kids are into like the original Star Wars, you know, New Hope and, mm-hmm. you know, Empire and all that stuff.
Right.
Darth Vader's a little bit scary for him. You know, they're still young, 5 and 6. You know, when you look at it in those ages, it's like, well, you're like right in the beginning stages of them enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, for what you would see on Disney and so on, it was a lot more violent than I was anticipating. And I'm not criticizing the violence. I'm just saying I'm glad I watched it before I showed it to my kids because I don't think they would be ready for it.
Have you started watching Clone Wars with them?
That's a funny thing. So I said last week I'm going to go watch Clone Wars, and I got all set up to watch Clone Wars.
Uh-huh.
What do they want to watch? Elena of Avalor. I'm like, but Clone Wars. No, Elena of Avalor. I'm like, why Elena of Avalor? Well, Mikey said, because I like princesses.
That's awesome.
I said, okay, you like princesses, but let's watch Clone Wars. No, I want to watch Elena of Avalor. So I said, but why princesses? He said, because I can't wait to kiss them all.
Oh. Oh, that's awesome.
I'm just like, all right, I guess like you're a ladies man, you know?
He's a princess man.
He's a prince. He wants to kiss them all.
Prince Among Princesses.
So no, we haven't yet, but I'm still working because I want to watch. I've been wanting to watch Clone Wars, you know?
All right, cool. So, and then I guess the only, did I hit most of my notes? I think so.
We talked a lot about a lot of streaming, a lot of services, a lot of Disney and all this stuff. And I mean, a lot of it was Disney.
Mm-hmm.
I think with good mention, I mean, they have a ton of stuff on there. How about we get into Soul? We do have a trailer this week we should finish up with. What do you say?
Let's do it.
We could go all night about, you know, nonsense, but all right, Soul. Let me first start with, and you mentioned it earlier tonight when you said that Avatar holds up with the graphics and it's 10 years old, but when you look at graphics, it's still like solid.
Yes.
The thing that jumped out with me most with Soul is how realistic, I mean, it's cartoony in their, mm-hmm. in their like curves and sweeping noses and big bulging eyes. And you know what I mean? Like just, it just looks animated.
Yeah.
But my God, does it look like it's real animated?
I mean, even the backgrounds and the backplates, those are the things that look so real.
It's freakish. It's so real.
Yeah.
You know, and when you mentioned about Avatar, I remember watching Avatar and, you know, you go Avatar 3D and all this stuff, right? And it's like Avatar was like super real. And this stuff is like, and Avatar was like real.
It was meant to be photoreal.
Exactly. Photoreal. I like that. Whereas Soul is just too.
It's meant to be animated and yet the backgrounds feel photoreal.
Yeah. It's freakish. Overall, though, you know, I think the thing that I enjoyed most is the thing that you don't see enough of, and that's when you're looking at animated films, there's a lot of animal things, there's a lot of white people things and so on. But this is like an emphasis on jazz and blues and soul music,
uh-huh.
of black culture and black neighborhoods, inner city kind of stuff. And I think that's so cool because like you never get to see that. And growing up in the city of Chicago, and you grew up in D.C.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in these neighborhoods, you know? And and then to say that, you know, you never really see it realized in a movie. And now it is. I mean, I think that's really awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it looks. I want to watch it. I mean, especially for the music sense, it looks really good.
Yes. And I think, you know, you have Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey. So they're obviously huge names as the lead voices in this.
Yeah, for sure.
But to me, Pete Docter, he was one of my Disney Pixar executive crushes. Have I told you about my executive crush?
No, I never heard this.
So one of the first films that I went to a screening, you know, to an employee screening or, you know, for work because we were working on it was Up.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So we went into the Up screening and who gave the talk before our Up screening to you know, lead the Disney Channel marketing on that? But Pete Docter. Pete Docter came and spoke to this.
Pete Docter.
This room of 400, you know, Disney people. And he explained it to us. And just like, I was like, oh, Pete Docter is the best director, producer of these films. And then he did Inside Out. And it's just this emotional roller coaster, you know?
Yeah.
And this on top of that, if you have Pete Docter and you have soul music and you have just like the music through this trailer is again, just like it's crafted specifically for this trailer. I don't know that, but I, you know, it feels like it is, you know, it's jazz, you know, piano bass lines. And it's just like a beautiful exploration of this time, space, and like you said, the culture.
For sure. I mean, when you think about it, it's like so much of everything leaves out the marginalized.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think about, I mean, whatever it is, I mean, whether it's, you know, minorities or even like homeless or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, like nobody tells the stories of these people, especially in animation. And then to finally finally come through in an animated like cinema release. Awesome music and to tell the stories and stuff. I mean, you know, yeah, you do get black movies in Hollywood and everything, but like with animation though, when you think about things like Mr. Freeze or something, you know, like he's a one-off character.
Yeah.
But the entire cinematic piece is not surrounding him, his family, and the neighborhood he came from, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Where with this, it's like Mr. Freeze, like this is where he came from.
This is the main character, main understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think the movie's going to live in the real world or live in that abstract black background world?
Elaborate a little bit more. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
So, you know, after he steps through the manhole.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah.
He either dies or he, you know, becomes unconscious and has his soul leave his body.
Yeah.
And then he meets up that other baby soul that's Tina Fey, you know, and we don't know whether she's a dead baby or not.
So that's a good point. And I was... And I thought about that, and I was thinking that the real world is the world that I was kind of talking about in the sense that
right.
It's what, like, the average moviegoer is going to see is going to be, like, the inner city ghetto or whatever where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to live more in the stepping through the manhole world because that I kind of view this as a movie that's bridging different worlds. In other words, bridging from, like, more the white animation or the animal animation over into like a real life black Hispanic inner city possible poverty gang kind of world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think to ease the palate of the average moviegoer, it's going to play more in that fantasy side of the world than it is in the real world, you know? And then you're going to see movies following this that are going to play more in the real world.
Okay.
Like, it's kind of like a bridge.
So when you see the piano keys and they use the steps,
uh-huh.
There are two movies in the past. There's Elephant Parts, which most people haven't heard of.
Have not heard of that, no.
And then there's The Big Lebowski.
I have heard of that. One of my favorites.
So the Big Lebowski has a scene where the Big Lebowski walks down like the surrealness of walking down piano steps when he's in the, you know, he's in the getup. It's one of their big numbers that they do within the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's based on Elephant Parts, and both the poster in Soul and that one scene where he's walking down the steps, you know, that's in against the black background. What do you think? Do you think it's just trying to draw on any cinematic legacy like that? Or is it just knowledge and just a nod to it? Or do you think it's going to go deeper than that?
Oh, I got you. So, well, my opinion is I think it will go deeper,
uh-huh.
You know, and the main reason I say that is because, like I said, I think it's a bridge into future movies that, I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know. You know, I mean, obviously my crystal ball is broken. But I think it's going to be more of a bridge into the future to say that we're going to, like I said, we're going to ease the palate so white audiences and stuff can take advantage of these things and watch them and enjoy them without them feeling being like too heavy and feeling too much guilt in a sense, right. You know? And then as time goes on, we're going to bring in maybe more, it's my opinion, but we're going to bring more like of, you know, the plight of the black man in a sense, or the inner city, or,
right.
You know, like we're going to address maybe more of the white privilege or any of that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's
deeper.
It's deeper than that. And it's going to be playing into the metaphors almost like the Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson song, you know, like Ebony and Ivory, right?
Because
it was all about like the piano keys, you know, the black and white keys playing in harmony.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, like maybe that's what it's about or something, you know, like, but yeah, I just think it's the movie's kind of a bridge, you know, and people are taking a chance.
Yeah.
You know, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
A piano key bridge.
Yeah. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think it's a good thing. And I think it's, you know, like the best way to put it is when you think about like when we make leaps forward legally or socially or culturally, you generally can't make these leaps forward until the culture is ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you look at like Brown versus the Board of Education, that's when, you know, for those who don't know, but that's when segregation in schools was, you know, the segregation was broken down, and they had this little girl in Topeka, Kansas, and she wound up being like the kind of the poster child to say that this girl is going to be the girl who's going to go.
So heartbreaking. Yeah.
The NAACP was going to then have the lawsuits and have the legal stuff, but they were waiting for the right moment, the right person, and the right time for these things to happen. And you couldn't force it before its time, you know, and I think that's kind of how this is in like animated cinema in a ways.
That's interesting. And I don't know, have you heard Malcolm Gladwell's revisionist history about Brown versus the Board of Education?
Oh yeah, I that's one of my favorites.
And to me, that's just like, it's so mind-blowing how by putting the children first before the teachers, they actually botched the whole thing.
Complete.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It set the African-American America back 20 years because they put the kids before the teachers, you know? If they broke down the segregation of the teachers before the children, it would have been so much better for society, but it just couldn't happen that way.
I mean, essentially what they said was the black teachers weren't worthy of teaching white kids. I mean, that's
so
more or less what it was, right? I mean, it's unbelievable.
And on the opposite side of the same coin, not only that, but the black children are privileged to be taught by white people who had no idea what it's like to be black.
Right.
So they have no frame of reference for the students that they're trying to care for.
You know, right. And what you're saying is like the other side of the coin of what I'm saying, right? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, and that's really how it boils down, is the one side is so privileged and the other side is not worthy. You know, and it's you're right, though. It's one of my favorite episodes because, you know, I work in education, obviously, but
yes,
you know, well, go back and listen. You'll hear I work in education. But yeah, I mean, it's like it is so just mind-boggling how we do things to think on its face that we're making it better, but the underlying message that happens within the society is we actually harm the cause we're trying to help.
Yeah. And on that point, I will let me switch gears a little bit for you, because I will say one last thing.
Shift gears.
Yeah. The morning show. I initially said it's, you know, newsroom light because of where it was starting from. But it is actually, I'm three episodes in now, and I'm very sad you only have seven days to do this. I gotta figure out a way to share my
maybe TV I'll get it. I don't know. $6, you know. I buy for 1 month, I watch a bunch of stuff, it's like $6, you know.
Yeah. So the morning show is saying very important things about the Me Too movement.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think it's being overly critical now, of the Me Too
movement. The morning show, that was the one with Steve Carroll.
Jennifer Aniston.
Right, and right, okay.
Reese Witherspoon. But there are some conversations in here where they're talking about the Me Too movement, and they're talking about it in this frank, honest way that I just think is refreshing and just the way people would talk about it if there wasn't a Me Too movement. Because I think people are scared to talk about the reality of the situation because the Me Too movement is a real thing, and real people were hurt very badly by the fact that misogyny and these things are real.
Can I jump in really quick?
Yeah.
You know, so as things happen in the United States, there was another school shooting the other day at Saugus High School, right?
So close to us.
Yeah.
Like half the people at work live there. So it's amazing.
For sure. And I did my internship at Valencia High School in the Hart District. So same district right down the road. But anyway, what I thought was, you know, and whenever I hear these things, as an educator, what would I do in these situations?
Yes.
And there was a picture of a male teacher hugging a female student that I saw, you know, like consoling the student. And obviously, I mean, everybody was so distraught in the image and everything. And it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's so sad that in this time of like a Me Too movement, I thought like, well, okay, the whole event is over. I'm a psychologist in a high school. Mm-hmm. And there's a girl, let's just say, you know, girl hypothetical, whoever she is, and she's having a complete breakdown. Do you do the human compassionate thing and just embrace this kid and say, hey, you know, it's over and we're going to get through this thing?
Yeah.
Or do you...
You have to master the side hug.
Or... Exactly. Or do you just like not do anything and say, girl, you're on your own. I don't want to get sued because it might get misconstrued as like molestation or something.
Right.
Right. How does that go down?
Well, you don't have daughters. I have a 13-year-old daughter, right? But even with Audrey, I'm like, I enjoy hugging her, but I you know, I side hug. I give her a little punch in the back, you know what I mean? I give her a man hug. You know, like I overemphasize the man hug with all the women in my life, except for my wife, you know?
For sure.
So it's about that. It's about just like, I understand that there is a thing going on now where I have to side hug every single person that is not my wife.
right,
you know. And it's funny because I've hugged people where they hug me back and they put themselves like into me. You know what I mean? Like I go in for the side hug with some women and they will turn and like push their whole body into me, and I'm like,
well, Ted, I do the same. I mean, you know, I push my body into you. I mean, come on.
Oh yeah, you know, we do a good hug.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's very noticeable that I'm trying really hard, and you know, other people can do whatever they want to do with that.
But that's the thing, though. It's like you leave it up to somebody to do it to you, right? Because you're like, okay, well, this is really uncomfortable. Like. This past Oktoberfest party at Clarissa's work, they had this thing, and there was a PE teacher that I worked with, you know, and I saw her. I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going, you know? And
yeah,
of course, she comes and gives me this, like, hard embrace, you know? Uh-huh. And I'm like, whoa, okay. Like, I'm not saying I wouldn't hug you, but, like, I'm kind of nervous because I don't know how you would take it, but for you to jump in and hug me, I guess is all right. I mean,
can you sign this document before you hug me like that again?
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. You know, it's like you get to this point in society where, you know, this thing happens at a high school, or you come up to a teacher, or like you're talking about where other women and stuff other than your wife, or you're even your own daughter for that matter.
Yeah.
And it's like, where does the Me Too movement begin and end when it comes to like, you know, I'll give my mother-in-law a hug, my mom, and I'll give my father-in-law a hug, you know, or my stepdad a hug or something. And it's like, but for some reason, you know, it's like the hug turns into molestation and banging or something, right? You know,
yes.
Like, where's the line drawn?
Right. Episode 3 of the morning show,
they address that.
That's where they have a good, they don't talk about the hugs like ad nauseum like us, but they do talk about the Me Too movement and how it's affected like just society as a whole. And it is necessary, but it is a necessary evil. You know what I mean? There is, it's not all great what's happening right now. So it's very interesting. I love the frankness that the morning show deals with, and it's great. And I love that Jennifer Aniston is a powerful woman in this space. So you don't have to worry about Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. And Steve Carell is like a sympathetic character in this whole thing. There's nobody in this show that I dislike, you know?
I didn't mean to put my member inside of you. Like, it doesn't get far, does it?
He's like, it was all consensual, you know?
Okay.
Like, a woman yells rapist at him in New York City's streets. He chases her down and is like, I didn't rape anybody. The term is sexual misconduct. And he's like yelling at her from afar.
That's so funny. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. It's like these things just sometimes get out of control to where, like, you get a couple of people who use their power to take advantage of beautiful women. I mean,
yeah.
And then it's like it trickles down to like me and you who have like, you know, like gray in our beards, you know, and or whatever it is. And it's like all we want to do is say hi without being judged. You know, it's like I don't want to have sex with you. I just want to say hi in a friendly way.
Can I be nice at work and just say hello?
Or if something tragic happens, I want to help you, but I don't want to be so cold that you think I'm a jerk, but like society says I can't do that.
Where's the line?
Like,
where's
the line? You know, it's like, and that's the thing. It's like sometimes these things pop up and it's like, it's an all or nothing, I think, is what happens, right?
Or there's this awkward thing where we make Bryce ask people if he can hug them. You know what I mean? We say to him, you have to ask people before you hug them, you know? And he's a hugger. He loves hugging people. So he's like, can I hug you? And I was like, oh, it's cute. But, you know, it's so sad.
You've heard of the Minimalists.
The Minimalist?
The Minimalists.
The podcast?
Well, it was a movie, too. It's on Netflix and all this stuff.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so these two guys who are the Minimalists.
Oh, yeah, those guys. Yeah.
They go around and then they're always talking about like, oh, we're huggers, you know, and we hug and this and that. So if you go on like the reviews of their documentary, like it's like every other review is about hug raping.
Oh,
like,
no.
Oh, yeah, they're minimalists, but they want to hug rape everybody, you know, and it's like, okay, it's not that bad. I mean, geez, they ask, first of all. You know, but yeah, it's like hug raping.
that's a strange term. I did not know that was a
You
term.
Never heard of hug rape?
No.
Oh yeah, people who just jump in and hug without consent, it's called hug raping.
That's why the side hug was invented, my friend.
The side hug, yep. All right, man. You know what? I hate to say it, but
let's
before I hug rape you, I better get out of here. You know. I'll be hug raping a lot of people tomorrow at Mikey's birthday.
Hug rape me anytime.
Hug rape me.
All right. Good night.
Hey, I'm glad you got to watch like a shit ton of TV. I guess this far. If anybody's listening, they're not 12, so we can swear, you know. But. All right. Hey, I'm glad you got to watch a lot of TV. Enjoy your new phones with your three camera lenses and all that stuff.
Right.
I'll stick to my iPhone 8 with the one camera lens used.
Oh, God. I hope I can actually put some pictures and some video of these lanterns flying off in the sky like tangled.
Oh, here's the thing.
Yeah.
One camera for video, one camera for stills.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So if you screw up, hey, you just don't know your equipment. So like you do video, she does stills or however it works, and then just figure it out from there and do some cool ass, like show up, be like, hey kids, we're here, and cut together like some 3 minute, 4 minute YouTube video. And then you do like the it goes up and then it goes really fast. You know? Like, you know how people do that kind of cut, you know, that jump cut edit type thing where like it's all slow-mo leaving your hand and then it goes really fast. You know, and
yeah,
come on, you got to like work something with these new phones.
We gotta ramp up the time lapse.
Yeah,
ramp in the time lapse there. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so practice some of your edits, watch a lot of YouTube videos, and see what other people have done, and just totally like crush what they've done. On that note, man, I better go so I get a good night's sleep, so I'm ready for the brunt of Frank.
Hey,
I'm just kidding.
Have a good birthday party tomorrow.
Yeah, we will, and you too at the lantern launch. Launch or whatever. I don't know.
That's right. Imperial California Lantern Launch.
So if I find on Cal Fire, if anything's happened, I'll know whose birthday party to blame.
Awesome. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk to you.
Bye.
All right. Bye now.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.